We're here on Lamed Ches Amud Beis. Let's just review the last point that we made, was that Asher Lo Arusa, according to Rabbi Akiva, could be interpreted even Lepashtei Dekra, even within the context of Pshuto Shel Mikra, and it's telling me something about Ones Umefate, and that is that you do apply Kimlei B'Rabbeinu, you don't apply the logic of Rabba that we suspend Kimlei B'Rabbeinu because of Knas. The Mishnah is saying Asher Lo Arasa, the Pasuk, excuse me, is saying Asher Lo Arasa to teach me that if she's an Arusa, then there's no Knas because it's Chayav Misa, Baal Bito. And even though it's a Knas, we still apply the principle of Kimlei B'Rabbeinu. That doesn't work out for Rabba, and if a Rabba could not accept Rabbi Akiva, and that's the last thing we did. So we're going to start today with Tana Rabbanan, which is here on Daf Lamed Ches Amud Beis, and we're counting up, I think it's 10 lines. Let's see it again. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 lines up from the bottom. Tana Rabbanan. Knasa Levi. The Gemara quotes a Braisa that records a Machlokes about who collects the Knas in the case of a Nairosh and his Arsav and his Garsha. According to the Tanakhama, this Braisa, Leaviyah, her father collects the Knas. Nothing changed as a result of Nis Arsav and his Garsha. Nothing changed. The Yesh Omrim, but the second opinion quoted in this Braisa is the Atzma, that she takes the Knas for herself. So the Gemara immediately is bothered, li'atzma amai. I mean, the Torah says that a father collects the knas in the case of onus and mafata. Why would the second opinion in this braisa say that she collects the knas? Amar Rav Chisda, hocha ben nairosh and his arasav and his garash askinon. We're talking about a case of Narish and Sasu Vinis Garsha. Because Miflegi, the Machlokes here that's recorded in this Braisa, is Bepluta de Rabbi Akiva de Masnisen, Rabbi Akiva de Braisa. If you remember, Rabbi Akiva de Masnisen said that from the words Lo Asher Lo Arasa, we derive that instead of the Knas being collected by the father, it's collected by the Bas, who is Rabbi Akiva and the Braisa held that we take this Pasuk and we use it for Gzeirah Shava, and therefore nothing changes, and the father collects the Knas, even in the case of Nara, Shinis Arasim, and his Garish. Now we start the new Sugya. Amar Abai. Ba Aleha Umesa Potu, Shenemar Leavi HaNara, Velo Lavi Mesa. According to Abaye, if before Hamada Bidin, the Nara dies, then there's no parasha of Knas. Why? Because when we interpret the Pasuk Lavia Nara, it means that she's alive. So we're going to leave Abai now for a few minutes on the back burners. We're going to study an entire Sugya of Rava, and then we're going to come back at the end after we reinterpret Rava, and we're going to compare Rava to Abaye. What do I mean to emphasize here? You can get the misimpression that the original understanding, the first understanding of Rava, is somehow related to Abaye. In fact, we're going to see in the original understanding of Rava, he rejects Abaye completely. But the Gemara is going to change its interpretation of Rava. And when we get to the end, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel, then we're going to see the relationship between Rava and Abaye. Milsa de pshita le Abaye, mi boile le Rava. So although it was simple in Abaye's mind, there was there was no doubt about it that if she dies before the Amar Bedin, there is no Knas. Rava himself vacillates about this. Again, keep in mind, this is not the Rava that we're about to learn. This is the Rava that's going to be reinterpreted later on. Dibai Rava had a suffix The sugya later on, we didn't get to it yet on Daf Mem Aleph, establishes that if the Nara did not get a chance to claim her knas, and then she became a bogeres, in such a case, the Ma'anis will pay the knas to the Nara. So what happens is the knas shifts from the Av to the Nara with Bagus. That's the sugya later on. Rava has the following suffix. What happens in a case where the Nara dies while she's in Narus, and now, had she been alive, she would be a Bogera. So let's say she died at the age of 12 and 5 months, and now the father wants to collect the Knas, and she, it's already a month past the date of her death, meaning it's already let's put it this way, from the moment of her 12th birthday until the moment of Hamad Bidin, when the father is now claiming the Knas, more than a half a year has passed, but she had died within that half a year. So Rav vacillates, yesh baga bekever or ein baga bekever. And what's the nafgimino? If we assume that she becomes a bogeres simply because of the passage of time, even after her death, then the knas belongs to her, and she will now bequeath it to her yorshim, dibna havi. Again, we're going to have a whole sugya how she could possibly have a child. But let's just theoretically say she could have a child. That child would inherit her if we hold yesh baga bekever, because now we go back to the sugya that says that if she becomes a bogeres before Hamad Bedin, the knas is hers. O dilma ain't baga bekever. Or should we assume that Misa freezes everything? She doesn't become a bogeres, and therefore the avia havi, the knas belongs to her father. So Rava doubts and vacillates about who would collect this knas. Now notice, according to both studim in Rava's suffek, there is a knas. Rava is not doubting for one split second here in this original formulation of Rava that there is knas even for Avi HaMesa, even though she's dead before the Hamad Bedin. That's absolutely against Abaye. So therefore, I submit to you, which is going to be Tosus's, I'm relying here on Tosus here, that when the Gemara says, Milsa the Pshita Le'a La'Abaye Mi Boyle L'Rava, that is if to say Rava vacillates about Abaye's principle, That's not relevant now. That's not applicable now in the original understanding of Rav. The Gemara is going to reformulate Rav, but if Rav's vacillation was about Baga Bekever or Ein Baga Bekever, then it means that he held that there is Knas even after the Misa Sanara. The question is this a Knas for a Bogeres, which means that now she would collect the Knas, she's not alive, so her son will connect the Knas? Or does it mean that Ein Baga Bekever, and therefore the father is still in the driver's seat? But clearly, the underlying premise here of Rava is that there is Knas even after her death. So that Rava is not darshaning the Pasuk V'nasar Lavi Anara V'lo Lavi Mesa. He assumes Avi Anara means even if she's Mesa. So now the Gemara is going to investigate this possibility that she could have a son who would inherit her, which would mean that if we assume a katana can't get pregnant, let's assume a nara could get pregnant, well, that doesn't give her much time to give birth to a viable being if we're saying that she gave birth during her Naris period. The Naris period is all told 6 months. Umimi Avra, is it really possible that she could have gotten pregnant? Now, at this point, the Gemara might even doubt that whether a Nara could get pregnant in general. Certainly, the Gemara is going to reject the possibility that a Katana could give birth to a viable being. But let's see what the story is with a Nara. Vatani Rav Bibi Kameda Rav Nachman. So we have a brisa that Rav Bibi presented to Rav Nachman. Shalosh Nashim Shamsos B'moch. This is going to be the Tanakama Rabbi Meir. The Chacham will disagree. So let's just see what the Tanakama holds. Normally, we would not be matir tashmish b'moch unless it was a matter of absolute emergency. But here, according to the Tanakama, there's an emergency situation. She could put in a moch before tashmish as a method of contraception, and we're not going to hold her responsible for being mashdis zera.
Wait, this is before?
Before tashmish.
I thought it was wiping afterwards.
That is going to be the sugya that we had of Rav Yossi Aglili. Whether or not we can rely on, what was that called, tishapech? What was the language of the Gemara? Just give me a second, I'll try to remind myself. What was the language, do you remember?
Tishapech, so it sounds right.
Tishapech, was it?
Look on Ramad Zayin of Ravid, towards the bottom.
Okay, just to get the language down.
Isha Mezano, Misapeches.
Misapeches, right, Misapeches. But now we're talking about Moch. Moch is something that she inserts before the beer, and that prevents the zera from reaching its goal. So that's a problem of Ashkosa zera. But we're going to allow it in the following three cases where there's a danger. If we don't allow this method of contraception, there's a danger to Allah. The Eluhain. Here are the three cases: Ktana, Ume Uberes, Ume Nika. So let's go through the three cases. This is the brisa of Rabbi Meir. Ktana, they allowed shimush b'moch, shemetis aber v'tomos, that a ktana who becomes pregnant will not be able to survive. Again, in today's medicine, maybe we have other methods where we can intervene and take the fetus out of her body. But back in the day, this was a dangerous situation. Now, I have a footnote here, I'll just read to you. He says, Midivrei HaSugya, what do we see from the Sugya? That the Braisa holds that in Ketana Misaveres, he vadai meso machmaske. She's going to definitely die. And the Gemara is going to say, if that be the case, how is it possible for this Anusa to have a child who would inherit her, because she's going to definitely die. That's if she's a ketana. Next, meuberes. What's the problem with a pregnant woman? Why would this beer without a moch be dangerous? Shematasa ubra sando. So this means that the danger here is not to the mother, as in the case of a ketana, but rather the danger is to the fetus itself. In fact, there's a Gemara at the end of the Yuma, at least according to many Rishonim, the way they learn it, that allows violating even the Shabbos itself for the sake of the life of the fetus. So the fetus is a being unto itself. Now, if a pregnant woman will have this tashmish, there's a possibility that somehow, as a result of that tashmish, the woman could somehow become pregnant again. Again, I don't know if it's exactly pregnancy as we know it, but whatever it is, it's going to endanger the life of the fetus. So for the sake of the life of the fetus, we're going to allow tashmish b'moch. That's Rabbi Meir. And the third category where we allow it is meinika. Why? Because Shema Tigmal es Bina. So now we're talking about her son who's alive, he's well, and he's nursing. If she becomes pregnant, then her milk is no longer healthy for the child. And therefore the child might perish. Again, it's not like today where we have other methods of feeding a child. But in those days, Yanika was absolutely critical to the life of the child. The Ezuhi Ketana, At what age do we say the girl is mature enough so that the bio will become dangerous for either her or for the fetus? Is mibas achasas reishana v'yom echad at shteimis reishana v'yom echad? Pochos mikan, if she's less than 11 years old, v'yaser alkein, or if she's more than 12 years old, mishameshes kedark of olechus, she's not allowed to use a moch, because if she's younger than the age of 11, she won't become pregnant at all, so won't endanger her life. But if she's older than 11, then she can become pregnant in a way that would endanger her life, and if she's older than 12, then she could carry her pregnancy to full term and give birth without endangering her life. The Chachamim Omrim, Achazu v'achazu, whether or not she's 11 years old, or she's pregnant, or she's nursing, Mishameshes kedark of olechus, we're not afraid of danger, because what she's doing is natural, without the moch. It's natural. It's in the context of marital relations. And she'll, so to speak, be protected by divine providence. Nothing will happen. Why? Mishum she'nemar. And I think it's a pasuk in Mishle. No, it's a pasuk in Tehillim. Mishum she'nemar shomer psayim Hashem. When a person acts in a way that's normal, that's natural, most people behave that way, it's accepted human behavior, then God protects him. So we're not so interested in the machlokes here between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, which really requires a great deal of analysis. But what we're interested in is that a ktana cannot give birth. Mimonoshim. If she hasn't reached the age of 11, she cannot even become pregnant. If she's 11 up to the age of 12, she will not be able to survive the pregnancy.
And the Chachamim don't dispute that. They just...
Right, the biology, the facts on the ground are accepted, but according to the Chachamim, if she gets pregnant, she won't die from it. That's called Shomer Psoim Hashem. So if this be the case, then the earliest time that a woman could possibly become pregnant and give birth would be after the age of 12. But Chitema, and if you'll say, the Abrak Shinara, maybe at the age of 12 she became pregnant. The Olida, and she gave birth, Kshinara. And within that Naris period, she gave birth to a viable child who's going to inherit it. So the Gemara says, I have another problem here. Not only do I have the issue of this Mishnah regarding Ketana, etc., but I also have a statement of Shmuel. Ubeshita Yarcha Mika Yolda, could she possibly give birth within the 6 month period of Naris? V'amar Shmuel Ein Beit Naris Lebagris El Shisha Chadoshim. So the entire span of Narus is only 6 months. Once she reaches the age of 12 and a half, she becomes a Bogeres. So it's not possible that she became pregnant at the age of 12 and gave birth while she was a Nara. And Rav is talking about a case where she died while she was a Nara. So even if she died the very last day of her 6 month period, and even if she got pregnant on her 12th birthday, the max amount of time for this fetus to grow in its mother's womb would be all of 6 months. And it's impossible to give birth to a viable being in 6 months. V'chi tema, perhaps you'll suggest that we could reinterpret Shmuel. Shmuel never meant to say that there's an absolute rule that at 12 and a half she becomes a gdola, a bogeres, but rather what he meant to say was, let's reinterpret Shmuel, that b'tzir hu deleka, hotfei ika, that less than 6 months, the minimum 6 months, there's no possibility of her becoming bogeres before the 6 month pass. But he doesn't disagree that, let's say, for example, she didn't have shtei saros, so we can extend the 6 month period of naros until she sees shtei saros, and that would mean that she could possibly still retain her status as Venara even for 9 months. So Gemara rejects this. This can't be possibly a reinterpret. This is not a valid reinterpretation of Shmuel. Ha ela ka amar. Let's read Shmuel carefully. He adds the word ela. And the word ela means only. He's emphasizing that not only is 6 months the minimum amount of time for her to be a Nara, it's also the maximum amount of time. She cannot be a Nara for more than 6 months. So therefore the Gemara goes back to the drawing board to reinterpret Rava. And this is going to be the second version of Rava. And this is going to be the version that's most relevant to Abaye that we started with today. Ella, what was the suffix of Rava? Hachi kami boile. This was the vacillation of Rava. A man was ma'anis and nara, and she died before Hamad Bedin. And now we've gotten to the point where if she would be still alive, she would be a bogeres. And Rava's suffix was the following: Yesh bagar bekever upoka ha'av, o dilma ein bagar bekever lo poka av. Rava wanted to know whether or not the father has the ability to collect knas in this case. Do we say that her situation after she dies is that she can continue to grow, so to speak, I mean, to get older, again in inverted commas, and she can become a bogeres? And we know that in the case of a bogeres, the father cannot sue for knas. O Dilma, on the second side of Rava, we're not going to say, well, if she were alive, she would have been a bogeres by now, but she still has the status of a nara, and everything freezes with her death, v'lopaka av, and if the father still has his status to collect the knas. In this context, the first side of Rava's suffik would contradict Abaye. I'm sorry, the first side of Rava's suffik could be reconciled with Abaye, because if we're going to assume that after death she became a bogeres, and therefore the father is out of the picture, that could be what Abaye, at least halach lamais, again, Rabbi derives it from a pasuk, if you remember, as the alfusa, avia naro v'lo avia hamesa. But what he means by lo avia hamesa means that she became a bogeres bekever. But in the second side of Rava, Rava's not sure about it. He thinks that maybe ain't baga bekever, and therefore the father could still collect the knas. So what was absolutely certain to Abaye is a matter of suffet according to this new formulation of Rav. Now, I want to point out that there's a lot of literature here in the Achronim which we're going to skip over, but I just want to mention, at least touch on it, so we have a picture of some of the issues. So first of all, what Abai seems to be saying is that the father has no schus at the time of Hamadah Bedin if his daughter is not alive. And that would apply, presumably, even if she's still within her six-month period of time. Rava was only willing to entertain the possibility that the father is knocked out of the ballpark here if she was Baga Bekever, if enough time passed before the Amar Bedin that she would have been, had she been alive, a Bogeres. Abai seems to say no, even if let's say the rape situation took place on her 12th birthday, so to speak, and a month later she died, is Abai would say the father has no recourse to collect knots, because Lavi Anarvel or Lavi Mesa, whereas in that case Rama would certainly collect the knots. So it doesn't seem that even in the side of Rava, Yesh Baga Bekever, that he's really reconcilable with Rava. There might be some overlap with Rava, Aloch Lamaisa, in certain cases where before he got to the Amar Bedin, she would have become a Bogeres Bekever. But that's not what Abai was saying. Then there's a whole other discussion over here. And that is that the sugya seems to assume that the schus to collect knas is transferable by Yerusha to the Yorshim. That schus shahoysa li'av b'knas paka b'bagruso shalbito b'keper. And now what happens over here? Let's say, if you hold according to the first side of Rava, the Yesh Baga Bekever, so the father now is out of the picture, and the question would be whether or not the father could now bequeath that schus that he had before the Kamon Bedin to his Yarshim. And the impression you get from the Gemara is that Yesh Baga Bekever means that there won't be any knas at all. In fact, the Gemara connects it with Abaye. Why isn't the right of the father, Schusa Av, transferable over to his Yarshim, to his heirs, through the parish of Yerusha? And this opens up a whole discussion about knas, where the knas can be bequeathed to heirs through the parish of Yerusha. So I'm just mentioning a few of the issues that have to be addressed here. Now the Gemara has another formulation of Rava's Suffolk, which would even be closer, perhaps, to Abai. Mar Bar Avashi Boy Lehacha, the way he formulated the Suffolk of Rava was the following. A man was Ma'anis and Nara. She died before Bagrus. Misa Osa Bagrus, O Ein Misa Osa Bagrus. The first side is that Misa itself knocks the father out of the picture, out of the ballpark. Why? Because Osa Bagrus, Misa itself makes her into Ke'ilu Abogeris. And that removes, undermines the schus of the father to the Knas, which would mean we don't have to wait, you know, we don't have to present the scenario, the Suffolk of Rava, in a case where we so to speak, push off the Hamad Bedin until after she would have become a Bogeres, meaning after the 6 month period since her Narus. But rather, immediately with her death, according to this side of Rava, even if he would run to Bezdin to be Tover the Knas the very next morning, they'd let him out of Shiva, he would still not be able to connect Knas because Miso Sabagos. And that really, Allah Lamaisa, is the same as Abaye. The only difference being that Abai derives it from a drasha from a Yalfusa, and Rava derives it from a what seems to be a smart that Misa is like Bagus, and it removes the schus of the fall. Now, in Rava's second side, Ein Misa Osa Bagus, it means that Misa is not mafkir the schus ha'av, so he can still collect a knas. And the knas remains his knas, even even after she dies, nothing changes here. Just like before she died, he collects the knas, so too after she dies, he can still collect the knas. Take when and Rava comes to no final conclusion. Now, what would Mar Rav Ashi say according to the second side of Ein Misa Osa Bagus if the time period passed past us 6 months? That we don't know. But again, now I want to summarize for you what we've more or less been saying over and over again, that when the Gemara said at the beginning that Rav had a suffix in that din that was Pasha to Abaye, it fits beautifully with Marv Rav Ashi. Now, Tosas Dima Maskel Ba'aleha, which is the third Tosas here on the page, he adds another point, that this entire sugya of the suffix of Rava only makes sense according to Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah. Because if you recall, Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah says that Ba'aleha li Akash and Isarsim and Isgarsha, the Knas goes to the Ba'as. But according to Rabbi Akiva in the Braisa, after Nisarsim and Isgarsha, then the Knas, just 1 second, I think I'm premature. Let me just read a few more lines in the Gemara and then we'll come back to Tosfos. Divra Maskel Bolen. Boy mine Rava me Abaye. Okay, so now we're going to talk about a case of Nisarsa, Boleha Vinisarsa, Mahu. What would be the din in a case where after the onus of this Nara, she was married off before the Amara Bedin? Who collects the Knas? Does the Nara collect the Knas? Meaning, do we assume that after Erusin, as far as Knas is concerned, she leaves the Rishus of the father? And this reflects the Shita of Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah, that Knas Aliatzma, that Nisarsa means that from now on she's in the driver's seat to collect the Knas. Oh, here's the second side in Rava. Since at the time of the onus she was in the Rishus of the father, even though at the time of the Hamada Bedin she left the Rishus of the father. Again, this is all reflecting Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah, because we recall Rabbi Akiva in the Braisa based himself on a Svara that Erusin does not take her out of the Rishus of the father, and he continues to collect the Knas even after Erusin. But our discussion is according to Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah, who says that Nisarsim is Gash Knas Aliatzma. And if that be the case, if after the Bia, after the Ones, she became a betrothed, right, she's an Arusa, then she leaves the Rishus of the father and she now collects the Knas herself. The other side in Rava's Suffolk is that we look at the moment of the onus, and since at the moment of the onus she was in the rishus of her father, now too she remains in the rishus of the father. Now let's just think. In the case of Rabbi Akiva and Mishnah, even after Nisarsim and Nisgarsha, she's still in the rishus of the father. No, I'm sorry. In the case of Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah, she leaves the Rishus of the father as far as Knas is concerned. So that would actually reflect in the first side. We'll call it the first side. I'm just accidentally calling it the first side of Rabbi's Safek. The father is out of the picture. And again, that reflects Rabbi Akiva the Mishnah. Now, what's the second side in Rava? That the father remains in the driver's seat because the bia took place when she was before she was an Arusa. Now, in Rabbi Akiva the Mishnah, the onus took place when? Let's go back to the Mishnah for just a moment.
Well, after the you received the Gerushim.
Yeah, that's what I think. And therefore that's not a contradiction to Rabbi's second side. right? Nisarsa, Narish Nisarsa Vinisgarsha, and then the onus took place. So Rabbi Akiva is saying that she now collects the knas. What would be in the case where the onus took place before the erusin? That's Rava's suffering. Okay, good. But again, let's just emphasize that according to Rabbi Akiva, the second version, that's Rabbi Akiva in the Braisa, this arsim mishgasha doesn't change anything, and the reshus of the father is still alive and active. So then this suffix of Rava would make no sense. Amalek, so Abaye responds to Rava. And he says the following: Miksiv, does it say in the pasuk Minasan Lavi Anara Asher Lo Arusa? Where do you see in the formulation of the verse of the Torah that with Erusin the father loses his rights? It doesn't say Vinasan Lavi Anara Asher Lo Arusa. Now let me read to you this note over here, because I think it really will shed a light. He says, "Kiderech shemia mi'et hakosuv mikra shebo maisa onus hoyali achar shahanaro nisarso v'nisgarsho kinemar." Ki motze ki yimtza ish nara besula shelo rasu tfasa. The Torah indicates that she was not in arusa at the time that the onus took place. Again, let's read the pasuk one more time. Ki yimtza ish, that means the onus, nara besula shelo rasu. If the Torah wanted to tell me that the father is knocked out of the ballpark, he forfeits his schus to collect knas because she now became an arusa, now meaning in between the ones and the habara bedin, then the Torah should have said v'yonasan la v'yanara asher lo arusa. In other words, the Torah should have added this stipulation that she's not an arusa in the pasuk that describes and defines the schusav nasan liavianara. Instead, the Torah says ashalo arusa to describe the maisa, the episode of onus, that she was not an arusa at the time of the onus. If she would have been an arusa at the time of the onus, then it's quite possible that. Just one second, let me just go over this one more time. If she would have been arusa at the time of the onus, then the father... I'm sorry, I lost it a second. So again, Rava was vacillating as to whether or not whether the father collects the knas or she collects the knas. Why? Because she became an arusa before the Amud of Bedin. So Abaye argues, counters against Rava, and he says, if you're telling me that we're going to knock the father out because of the arusa situation, which predates the Hamada Bedin, then it should have said V'nasan Lavi Anara Sharlo Arusa. Instead, what does the Torah say? That at the time of the Ones, she was not an arusa, which means an arusa and nesua, let's say, and nisgarsha. I'm sorry, arusa and nisgarsha. And then we knock the father out of the picture. That's the sheet of Rabbi Akiva in our Mishnah. But if the Torah would have wanted to exclude the father, even if the ones took place before the erusin, then it would have said v'nasan lavi anara shelo arusa. So Rava responds now to Abaye, Ulitameich, according to your logic, that if a person rapes a Nara before she's an Arusa, and then she becomes an Arusa, the father still collects the Knas, is how you can interpret the following Braisa, Hodesanya. The Braisa says, Ba'aleh Vinnises. So, this is a case of ones where she was married after the ones, before Hamad Bedin, and the Brisa says Liatzma. The Brisa says that she herself collects the knas, not her father, but she collects the knas. And apparently the reason for that is because the Torah says Asher lo rasa. Well, according to you and your logic, Abai, Miksiv, does it say Shmanasan Lavia Narasher lo Nesua? In other words, the Torah should have stipulated that the father at the time of Hamad Bedin forfeits his rights to collect the knas because she's an Asua. So Abai responds and he says, Hochi Hashti, you can't compare the two cases. Hasam, in the case of Nesua, Hoel Ubagris Motsi Mishusav, Nisuin Motsi Mishusav, Unisuin Mishusav. In other words, let's compare Nisuin to Bagris. Just like in the case of Bagris, meaning if she becomes a Bogeris before the Hamad Bedin, then she collects the Knas and the father's out. So too, if she became a Nisua, the father could not collect the Knas. Just like he can't be made for Anadarim after Nisuin. During Erisin, he could collect, he could be one of two participants in Afaris Nadar, but he loses his rights to Afaris Nadar within his suit because she leaves his rishus. So, how could the father collect the knas? Asks Abaye. In the case of a nesua, in the case of Erisin, there's no reason why the father should not be collecting the knas. Meaning, the bia took place before she was an arusa. She became an arusa. Let the father collect the knas. But if she became a nesua, the nesua takes her out of the rishus of the father. It's like a bagus, and therefore she collects the knas. So, don't ask me a kasha from this price of bo leva nises knas aliatzma, because your question, Rava, was on a different case. That was a case of Baalel Vinis Arsa, not Baalel Vinis Vinissa. Vinises. Ma Bagris Baalel Ubogra Liatzma, Af Nisuin Baalel Vinises Liatzma. Elan Erison, but you, Rava, are asking a question about Arusa. Nika Mafke Mirshusa Diavla Gabre. Erison doesn't take her out of the shoes. So again, the Baal, the Orus, it now enters into the picture and he partners with the father in Afaris Nidarn. But the father remains in the driver's seat as long as she's still in Arusa. Hatna Nara Murasa Vio Baila Mefirin La Nidarel. So the father continues to be made for Nidarim, despite the fact she became an Arusa. So we see that she doesn't leave the Rishus of the father through Erisin. So therefore, if she became a Mureses before Hamad Bedin, there's no reason why the Knas should be ripped out of the hands of the father. He still remains the Baal Rishus of the Nara, and he can collect the Knas. So therefore, Abai doesn't accept the suffix of Rava. He thinks it's absolutely crystal clear that the father still retains his rights, even after Arusa, Erisin, to collect the knas. It's only after Nisuin that the father loses his rights. So when Rava defended himself by quoting a Brisa, that Brisa was not relevant to this discussion, because that was the case of Baalel Vindises. Now, until now, we've been discussing various cases of Nara, of Naros. You know, sometimes she gets Knas in the second Mishnah, she doesn't collect Knas. Now the Gemara wants to know, are there other payments that the Ma'anes and the Mefate would have to pay above and beyond the Knas, independent of the Knas? And this is what's called, again, it depends upon ones versus mefate, but let's take the case of ones first. That's called nezek, tsar, and boshes. Nezek is another word for pagam. And tsar means that she suffers a certain pain when she was raped, as opposed to mefate. That's what the Mishnah is going to say, that in mefate there is no tsar. However, ripui and sheves, which are the last of the two, that the balance of the five chiyuve chavol, they don't apply. And the Mishnah says the following: Hamafata no say in shlosha dvarim, but ones arba dvarim. So we're adding now the knas. So in addition to the knas, in the case of mafata, we add tsar. I'm sorry, we add nezek and boshes. That's in the case of mafata. In the case of ones, we're going to add not only nezek and boshes but to the knas, but we're also going to add tsar. The ones are bo. Hamafata no sein boshes upagam. So it means in addition to the knas is boshes upagam. Most of alema ones haones she no sein es hatzar. He also pays for tsar. Ma bein ones lemafata. Ones no sin is atzar, mamafate no sin is atzar. So there's a discussion here why the Mishnah felt compelled to repeat what it already had presented in the Reisha. So one of the commentaries on the Mishnah is called the Tiferes Yisrael, and he wanted to suggest that the Mishnah now is emphasizing that in the case of mafate is never tzar. Even if she physically has tzar, but there's no payment of tzar. By the way, if any, oh, you have your own water. John, you want some more water? You're okay? Okay, we're going to finish up now. And there's another difference between ones umefata. Ones no se miyad, umefata l'chsheyotzi. In the case of mefata, the Torah gave, there's a parshas drachim, the other two possibilities. Either he marries her, again, if she agrees to marry him, and the father agrees to marry her off. In such case, there's no knas. Unless he divorces her. If he divorces her, and again, the Gemara is going to say that you can't take the Mishnah literally, it doesn't mean divorce her, but we're going to just, you know, out of naivete, we'll right now interpret the Mishnah as divorce. But it really means he refuses to marry her. Then he pays the knas. But in the case of ones, he, regardless, no matter what, whether he marries or he doesn't marry, in fact, he's obligated to marry her, but nevertheless, the Torah says he has to pay knas. Then ha'ones shoseh batzitzo, the ones is going to have to marry her no matter what, even if she's a balas mum, even if she has some sort of major physical disability. He cannot refuse to marry her because the Torah says lo siya l'isha and lo yuchal l'garsha kol yomo. So he's going to have to be stuck in this marriage for the rest of his life. Vamafater, imratza lahotzi, meaning if he decides that he doesn't want to marry her, motzi, which means no one could force him to marry her, and no one could force him to prevent him from divorcing. Kate said, Shoseh Basisa, give me some examples of a blemish. Afilu hi chigeres, even if she limps, she's lame. Afilu hi suma, even if she's blind. Afilu hi mukhashkin, she has a very severe dermatological pathology. And nobody would want to marry her, but he has to marry her. Why? Because he was ma'anis. That's called Shoseh Basisa. However, there is one case in which, even in Ma'anes, he divorces her. Nimtza ba ervas dava, dvar erva. In other words, they found out through Adim that she had a znus relationship after they were married. Oh, she ain't a ru'uya lava bi Yisrael. Or there's an iser to marry such a woman. Is ain't a rashoy l'kayim. He cannot remain married to her. Shenemar v'lo siya le'isha isha ha'ra'uya lo. So if I can borrow your pencil for a second, I'm just going to make a note as to where we got up to. And that's it.